Good morning. Oh, as Mary and I like to share, we unfortunately have no financial conflicts to report. Okay, so what you see here is every public health person and epidemiologist's worst nightmare. This is a really efficient way to transmit hantavirus. All right, so it's transmitted through inhalation of stirred up rodent feces or urine. Incubation is 1 to 5 weeks before symptoms present. And as you know, getting case histories that far back is very difficult. How many of us remember what we were doing or what we ate yesterday, let alone 5 weeks ago? And there is no person-to-person transmission, and it affects young, healthy adults. It affects the young and healthy adults. Virology, go through this one very quickly. It's part of the bunyavirus family. Right, clinical aspects. So these are the early symptoms: fever, headaches, muscle aches, GI problems, dizziness, and chills. Looks like many other diseases, right? Late symptoms include cough, lungs filled with fluid, shortness of breath. So then clinical manifestation is present there. So often by the time Hanta is considered, the disease progression is far into the course. So, as everybody probably knows, there's no vaccine for HPS, no cure, supportive treatments only, and the case fatality rate is high, which also is a good reason why we need to get people into care quickly. There's case fatality rates in Arizona, about 42%. And then, I'm sorry, I clicked a little too quickly, but in Coconino County, we're at case fatality, I believe, is 33%. So, Hanta history. In 1978, Hantan virus was isolated from a mouse near the Hantan River, South Korea. In 1993, the outbreak occurred in Four Corners area. So has anybody been to Four Corners? It's where you can stand in four states at once, and it's a really cool thing to do for any good tourist. So at that time, it was named Cinnambre virus, which was interesting how viruses get their names, but because it people in Four Corners didn't want it to be associated with Four Corners because that might hurt tourism. So in the previously before that, there had been no cases of HPS in Coconino counties since 2007. And this just depicts where cases across the U.S. of HPS have been located. And as you can see, it's primarily within Southwestern. And then right in that corner is Navajo Nation and Four Corners. So case one. In June of 2013, a previously healthy woman in her 40s presented at a local hospital with nausea, body aches, shortness of breath, and fever. Other family members had also reported being ill with GI symptoms. Because of that red herring of the family members reporting, hantavirus was not suspected until late that night, which we lost a lot of time on that one, of course. Unfortunately, the case died the next day. Case number two, also in July of 2013, a previously healthy woman in her 50s presented at a local clinic with fatigue, fever, cough, and was sent home with antibiotics. 2 days later, was admitted to the hospital where providers then suspected HPS because, of course, now they're on higher alert. The case was transferred to a Phoenix hospital and was confirmed with HPS. That case survived. Again, there's no cure, but early identification and preventive care certainly helps. So there were, from 2006 to 2015, 15 cases on Navajo Nation, 3 cases in our county, Coconino, and then other Arizona counties, 14.
And since I'm the epidemiologist, I'm going to take over from here. Some of you will recognize the shoe leather epi there. Are people familiar with shoe leather epi? Okay, great. We also do a lot of phone epi, right? Because it's cheaper and faster. But we actually did do shoe leather on this one. One of the reasons that the doctors did not recognize that case number one was because they actually asked the family, has the case been exposed to rodents? And they denied it. They said, no, absolutely not. There's nowhere in our house or anywhere that she goes. And so we pretty much, that's why no one suspected hantavirus. And as you see, the early symptoms are so general, you're not going to associate it unless you have that rodent infestation. So these two cases live 50 miles apart. They had nothing in common. And some of you may know there was an outbreak of hantavirus at Yosemite National Park a few years ago. Got pretty famous because there were quite a few cases at the same time. Usually Hanta doesn't show up like that. It's a case, maybe two cases at the same time. This was the same type of thing. It was just either a coincidence or the conditions in our community at that time that we had two within the same time period. When we went to talk to the family, the first case, remember, died. So we went to talk to the family very soon after her death to ask about rodent exposures. And it did take some shoe leather on this. The husband said, yes, he would meet with us. And then when we tried to text him to set up a time, we started getting texts about how he was going to spend the weekend in a retreat getting colonics. And then we got a text that said he would be going to a movie. We started getting a whole series of bizarre texts. Well, my colleague Marlene Gaither in Environmental Health stayed at it, and we did end up going to see him the next morning, and he didn't say anything about those bizarre texts. However, there were two teenagers sitting there in the room, so we think maybe somebody picked up his phone and had some fun with it, which is why you've got to stick with it, right? So also neither of these people had done much hiking or camping. Again, with Yosemite, that was in some cabins in Yosemite, so you would associate it with outdoor activity. They had spent time around their own homes, of course, and case number one had some additional properties and places where she spent time. Now remember, we've got that incubation of 1 to 5 weeks. You're trying to figure out where has she been in the last month. That's very difficult, especially if you can't talk to the case herself because she's no longer with us. So we really did start wearing out our shoes. In Flagstaff, however, we wear very comfortable shoes. It's unusual to see me in anything higher than a half-inch heel, so you're really getting a treat today. I'm also wearing a skirt, which I only wear to funerals and weddings. Okay, so... thank you, I'm here all week. All right, now on to the environmental investigation. So of course we wanted to check out all of these places where people said that the, where the family said the case had been. So we went to both of their residences, of course. One had a houseboat, so we went to look at that. We looked in garages, and sure enough, we did find droppings in many places around their homes, including in a garage where case number two was spending all of her time preparing, believe it or not, food packages to sell in her store. So, all right, so now there was also a biological component to this investigation. And the deer mouse is our biggest carrier of hantavirus, and you can see one there. Yes, it's cute, but it can be dangerous. You do not really have to prove, at least in our area, that a home or a place actually had hantavirus in the rodents that were infesting the location, and that's because it's so common. If you grab any mouse in the Four Corners area or in Coconino County, around my house, around anyone else's house, around Haley's house over there, you will find some hantavirus in some of the mice. However, we have a partner at Northern Arizona University, Dr. Nathan Nieto, who is doing research on rodents and pathogens. And so we have partnered with him, and he did come and trap and test some of the rodents around the homes. He did not find any hantavirus in those particular mice. However, again, that does not mean that that's not the location. This is a picture of the lab where he is. As you can see, people are suited up because of possible exposure to hantavirus. Since there's no cure, there's no treatment, you really need to be very careful. This also makes for a lot of fear in people's hearts when we come to their homes and want to look in their garage and we're wearing full suits. You can imagine how that goes over. And so, again, another good reason why I cannot wear a skirt on those days. All right, so he's looking at things like the seasonality of viral shedding. He's looking at are different members of our population more likely to be exposed? What conditions are necessary? So is a big rain year going to precede a big pinon nut year, which is going to precede a population growth in deer mice? So this is very helpful in the big picture, even if not for the individual cases. What are the implications of this? There are really several areas. Obviously, we want to focus on prevention, since there's no cure or treatment. You've heard us say that many times. So that's the big push here. So our message is definitely focused on not exposing yourself to hunt virus in the first place. So I have brought into this room, this is for the people on the recording since they can't see it, I've brought into this room a horse who is sweeping over to the side of the room. I had to talk McCormick Place into it, it's very complicated, but just to demonstrate that cleaning up your barn using a horse or other animal would be much safer than doing it yourself. I'm also wearing a large hat that has bananas, fruits, and zucchinis hanging off of it to promote nutrition. So anyway, back to this room here. So cleaning enclosed areas, we have a number of recommendations. You can see them on the CDC website, cdc.gov/hanta. If you want, but basically you're going to spray the area with a bleach water solution, you're not going to sweep anything up, you're not going to even vacuum because that also aerosolizes, so you must be careful about that. Another thing is for providers and for all of us to separate out our perception and the reality of where you can get exposed to hantavirus. So the perception for years has been in cabins or in old, you know, log houses like this one shown here. But in reality, our cases actually lived in quite nice houses. For confidentiality, I'm not showing you the exact house. But this really looks quite a bit like case number one's house. It was a very nice house. It was in a semi-rural area in terms of there's a lot of land around it. But the case number two's was not. It was just in a neighborhood. So we have to keep that in mind. And in fact, paradomestic exposure is the number one exposure for hantavirus, even though the big outbreak of at Yosemite made the recreational piece of that pie a little bit bigger. Usually it's paradomestic. Also, we want providers to be watching for those signs of hanta pulmonary syndrome, of course, because you don't want to miss it. And very general at first, but of course you want to watch for the symptoms that come up later. And because we do know that with early intervention, it increases the likelihood of survival. So we definitely want to get people aware of that. And as Marie mentioned, by the time case number two came around, a month after case number one, the providers at our hospital were much, much more, their awareness was much more heightened, and they spotted that case very quickly. In fact, they often have some, you know, what I'll call false positives. They'll call us worried about a Hanta case that doesn't turn out to be one. But as you all, most of you are probably epis, you'd always rather have your providers call you with a case that doesn't turn out to be a case than the opposite situation, right? I see heads nodding, right? Yes, and who remembers Doogie Howser? Doogie Howser, okay. Anyway, now a big star of stage and screen. All right, so this is my last slide. This is a great example of One Health because we had the environmental factors, we had animals, we had people. It's all those working together, so keeping an eye on that is really important. As I mentioned earlier, does the weather or the weather patterns, such as climate change, does that somehow contribute to food sources for the rodents? And then what's happening with rodent population? Dr. Nieto is even looking at male aggression in mice in certain populations to see if they bite each other more and pass Hanta on that way. Something I would never have thought of, but then I'm not a biologist, so that's okay. And then also we want to educate people about what they should and shouldn't do if they're in a situation where they might be exposed. And then I'll just end with and also more research on this, like Dr. Nieto's would be great. So just want to acknowledge the many, many people who contributed to this investigation. As you know, it takes a village to do an investigation. No one does it by themselves. And so we thank all of those partners. I think we have a couple minutes for questions, right? Right, so we can go back to that slide. There are a few cases in other areas. So, for example, I noticed there were a couple in Illinois, just to make sure you Chicagoans are on your toes, all right? You can't just rule this out. Plus, you're all young, healthy adults, so you can't get away with it from it there either. So, here we go. So, two cases in Indiana, three in Illinois, and then you can see we're concentrated more in the Southwest. Now, the other thing about Hanta, as I said, it's hard to diagnose at the beginning. It's also hard to diagnose later. So there may be lots of Hanta deaths around the country that are never recognized. So we, you know, before it was quote-unquote discovered in the U.S. in 93, there are lots of folks that feel that it probably has been around for much longer and just was never diagnosed. I also read that the Navajo Nation, the Navajo have a traditional oral history of people dying of a similar disease. They didn't have a name for it, but it may also have been hantavirus. Any other questions? We may have time for one more.
Does that mean that they were exposed in their state of residence, or that they could have gotten in elsewhere and brought it back?
Right. This is state of residence. However, I also looked at state of exposure, and it was not all exposed in the Southwest.
There are different hantaviruses in different rodent populations in different parts of the country. So the six cases in Pennsylvania are not Cinnombre virus. They're a different, although closely related, hantavirus. So
I happen to know that because that's where I'm from.